Beautiful. So find that comfortable space, that comfortable seat, or lie down. And just bring one hand to your belly and one hand to your heart, just to feel even more connected to this moment, to your body. With your eyes closed, just take a moment to tune in and just to check in to see how you're feeling right now in this moment. And just start by taking a deep breath in through the nose, just breathing in some fresh air. Just feel the breath moving all the way down to the belly. And then open your mouth, sigh out all of the air, let it go. Push all the air out. And then gently breathe in more fresh air on your next inhale, making it a little bit more in your first breath. Breathing it all the way through the body, down to the belly. And then open your mouth, exhale, let all the air go. Another deep breath in, deeper than the first, really breathing in this calming air, letting it move through the body, to every inch, every cell, all the way down to the belly. And on your exhale, take the deepest sigh as you exhale, let it go. And just continue to take deep breaths in and long exhales out of the body. Really coming into this moment. And just letting go of everything that happened before this moment. Letting go of your to-do list, letting go of what might need to be done after. And just be so in tune to this moment. Really opening up the different areas of your brain and your body to really feel connected. Maybe today, even keeping one hand on the belly and one hand on the heart, just really listening to what your body might not be telling you, but what you can feel. Knowing that where you are right now in all areas of your life is exactly where you're supposed to be. And as you take another deep breath in, just breathe in the words, I am calm, letting that move through the body. And on your exhale, let the air go, but just settle into the spot, I am calm. Another deep breath in, I am healthy. Letting the breath move through you, the thought move through you. And on the exhale, just settle into being healthy. And on your next breath in, just breathe in your intention for this moment. Breathe it in all the way down to the belly. And then on your exhale, settle deeper and deeper into this moment, into this intention. And you can keep your eyes closed. Just continue to breathe. And welcome to week 3 of Thrive in Your Body. So excited to be here with all of you tonight on this beautiful Monday. And we have an amazing guest expert with us. I'm really excited to share her with all of you. And I think that you're going to love her as much as I did when I got to speak with her for the first time. So I'm just going to introduce her to you, and then she's going to speak with us about thriving in our career. So Thrive in Your Body is all about really kind of tuning into your body and really figuring out what might be weighing you down. And this week in Module 3, we were talking a lot about stress, really paying attention to stress in our body, and our career and our job does weigh us down a lot as women. We're always trying to figure out what's the next step, what we want to be, all these fun things, but a lot of that kind of weighs us down and makes us not feel as healthy and as vibrant as we would like to feel every day. So Ashley here is going to kind of share with us about how to kind of thrive in our career so that we can feel healthier overall in our daily lives. So a little bit about Ashley. She left her successful career in national security. She was actually ran the Pentagon's Ministry of Defense Advisors in 2011. So she actually prepared senior U.S. officials to deploy to Afghanistan and serve as advisors to the Afghan government. So she left this really successful career to run her own business as a speaker and a career coach. In 2014, she was named by Apex Society as a Power 30 Under 30 leader. And in 2013, by the Diplomatic Carrier Magazine and Young Professionals in Foreign Policy as a Top 99 Under 33 Foreign Policy leader. Her mission in life is to raise the career bar for her generation. And she speaks about this journey at different TEDx's, and she's been featured in the Wall Street Journal, the Daily California, the Daily News, Forbes, and Fox News. And her whole entire experience, she realized, especially working in national security, that there was an absence of women. So as she was climbing the ladder and when she was launching her coaching business, she really, really wanted to help young women and women in general just kind of tap into their inner being to really thrive and really kind of explore what kind of career options could be out there for all of us. So I'm very excited to welcome Ashley Stahl. So Ashley, welcome to Thrive in Your
Thank you so much, Katie. Can you hear me? Is everything okay?
Everything is perfect.
Perfect. Well, thanks so much for introducing me. That was really flattering to hear all lined up like that, and I'm feeling very still from your meditation. So I'm honored to be here and just entering into this experience with all of you about a topic that's really close to my heart, because professionalism and really finding out who I was in the workplace was a huge challenge and later a huge victory. And I really want to kind of start asking you some big questions that can really inspire you to think differently about your career as they did for me. So to get started, my name is Ashley Stahl, as Katie mentioned, and I'm from ashleystahlcoaching.com. And I can't thank you enough for joining me today to discuss how you can fully step into your professional identity so that you can have a more healthy and a more fulfilling career. And as you know, I'm going to talk about this topic of professional identity and how you can really thoughtfully author a workplace identity for you that empowers you to experience a healthier, balanced career. And to me, this means having a certain protocol in place for how you're going to navigate corporate politics or any other challenge that can and does show up in the workplace. So before we dive in, I have a couple things to cover. First of all, why is it even important to give much thought to your professional identity? Why is this topic important? Well, first of all, just some data. 69% of employees report that work is a significant source of stress in their lives. One-third of U.S. employees are chronically overworked, and 75% of the workforce is hiding some part of their identity at work. I share that in my TED Talk. And 35% of the workforce has been bullied, And I promise, by the way, that I'm going to drop you and I'm going to pick you back up. So 60 to 80% of the workforce has difficulties from strained employee relationships. So 60 to 80% of employees out there are just really dealing with a tough relationship in their workplace, and it's probably impacting their productivity and their joy at work and the decision to stay in their job. So needless to say, these statistics indicate that many employees are feeling stressed, bullied, and boundaryless. And this is detrimental not just for your employer from the standpoint of retention, but to you from a standpoint of fulfillment and productivity. And I think that the root of this really lies in your professional identity and your professional boundaries. So you're in the right place tonight if you want to advance more quickly in the workplace. If you want more promotions, higher income. You're also in the right place if you're not really always feeling like your authentic self at work. You're feeling a little bit challenged and trying to find your authentic voice. And you're in the right place if you're still finding your new groove or you just want to feel better about your daily work life. And before we get started, I want to share a little bit more. I have a lot of good content. And I want to share a little bit more about how this has shown up in my career so that you guys know who this Ashley Stahl girl is on the phone with you. So right now, I currently coach 20-somethings and 30-somethings around the world on two functions. First, there's career coaching. I help my clients get clarity so that they can then work with me to master the job hunt. And the other thing that I do in my work right now is I business coach. I share my secrets with other budding entrepreneurs who want to launch a service-based business and get all the clients they want. So that's what my focus is now. But I haven't really had this balanced career all the time. This hasn't always been the case for me. When I was 22 years old, I graduated from grad school in London, and I completed my master's in foreign affairs and national security, and I networked my way over to the Pentagon in Washington, D.C. And as I sat there at the forefront of U.S. foreign policy and NATO's foreign policy efforts in Central Asia, I felt ready. I was ready for the challenge. But I was also 23 years old. So with my excitement, I made it through the first few hours on the job, and I was exceedingly polite and cheerful and helpful and excited towards the team that I was sent in to manage. And my job was progressing swimmingly until one official at the Pentagon, at least 30 years my senior, interrupted me mid-sentence, and he asked me, "How old are you?" And I stopped in my footsteps during this chapter of my life when I heard those words every time. And it was during this chapter of my life where I learned about the professional challenges that many of us face in corporate: age, gender, politics, bullying. And I learned the importance of honoring who you want to be professionally. And I'll never forget walking in day after day and hearing people discuss my age as I left the room and walked into the hallway. And I just felt so painfully feminine and green, and I was just embarrassed about where I was at for whatever my reason. I wasn't confident. I couldn't step into that dynamic. And it wasn't until later that this topic of professionalism completely rocked my world and changed my career experience. And at this time in my life, friends were asking me often to host these coffee meetings with them, and they would bring friends and more friends. And next thing I knew, I was filling coffee shops in Washington, D.C. about career topics and answering questions. And this is where I really learned how often all of us feel like we can be inauthentic in the workplace. And needless to say, this is when I started authoring my career coaching curriculum, and I really hold a space for this topic of professionalism. So to those of you who are here, my experience at the Pentagon solidified my mission to support all of you who want to step into bigger and better and healthier careers. Those of you who probably have been wearing the same shoes that I wore at some point or another. And to me, this means not letting your career happen to you, but choosing it. So before I dive in, I have so much stuff here that I want to cover. I just want to remind you, I know that Katie will send you this link. Every single month, I host a free teleclass, and if you make your way over to my website, you're welcome to register for my newsletter, and from there, I will send you the details every month on a free workshop that I'm offering over the phone, and that's ashleystahlcoaching.com. My next workshop is coming up this Wednesday on how to quit your job and become an entrepreneur, which I think is quite juicy. So on to the content. One of the most powerful ways in which I explain information is through distinctions, and that's what I want to share in this topic today. So what are distinctions? They're contrasts, they're a clear choice. And when you have a clear choice, you can use it as a tool, like flipping a switch. You can be on, you can be off, you can be up, you can be down, you can be an owner, you can be a victim. You can be a victim of a situation or someone's behavior all day long, or you can flip that switch inside of you, take a deep breath, and become an owner. You come from a completely different place as an owner, and you get better results. And with distinctions, this is usually the case. There are usually two chairs that you can sit in, and you get to choose which one speaks to you. And when you pick a chair, it completely dictates your life, your outcomes, and the results that you bring into your world. And today, the distinction I want to focus with you on is your social self and your professional self. And once you understand this distinction and you really step into it, it becomes a huge tool for your life and for your decision making. First, I'm going to grab a sip of water. Okay. So let's take a look at how we were socialized. When we were born, we were trained to interact with society, and we were trained on that same note to be acceptable, which means trying to make sure that your behavior was accepted by your community. Our parents helped us learn how to work within the grain of society so that we could avoid any serious rejection, embarrassment, or suffering. And it's not to say that these things didn't happen, but we were definitely pushed to fit into this agreeableness and this social grain where we didn't cause any upset as a kid. When we got home from school, our parents would ask us if we were good. And what does that really mean, being good? A lot of times from social conditioning, being good just means going against the grain, not creating any upset, whether it was wrong, it was right, just being good. And if we were bad, we'd get punished. And then there's a whole other module we could do today about what does it mean to be bad when you're a kid? What does that truly mean? So this is where the social self comes in. The social self is the overriding social desire to be liked at every juncture. So for those of you who have a notepad in front of you, I just want to share this so that you can think more about this. The social self is the overriding social desire to be liked at every juncture. And again, this brings up this question, what does bad mean? What is bad? The reality is that being bad when we were kids meant being disruptive in some way. And needless to say, the social concept of being good is often driven by this overarching desire to be liked. We want to be liked by friends, which is great, yet we subconsciously carry this likability factor into work. So here's a question for you that you can perhaps answer later in your evening as you're thinking more about this conversation. Do you carry your social self to work? Do you carry that social identity to work? Do you constantly feel focused on whether people like you? And likability, it's not to say that it's not important, but to what end? Because when you're driven by the desire to be liked, that can really damage your career. And I'm going to get more into this as we go along with some great examples. And before I dive into my first example, I just want to share a thought. Psychologists are finding now that we operate at a level of 5% consciousness, which means that 95% of our operation comes from the subconscious mind. On a subconscious level, it's very possible that our desire to be liked and our conditioning to be liked can really run the show. But is this a powerful way to run your career, by this desire to be liked? I remember when I left the Pentagon, I was asked to run a threat team for a Fortune 50 company who had employees all around the world, and they were being exposed to different security risks, and it was my job to manage a team of analysts, intelligence analysts, who were reporting on threats, and they would keep these employees safe based on their reports. And I'll never forget this opportunity that I had to give someone a promotion, and I had four eager analysts, all very intelligent, all very capable, and the one differentiator I had from all of these stellar employees was the one who just had the utmost professionalism. She found this balance of being herself, but really not being driven just by this desire to be liked, by being driven by being innovative, being driven by having a voice, being driven by sharing an opinion. And I really trusted her to stay even keeled, especially on a threat team where we were tracking terrorists all around the world and reporting on them to keep other people safe. I felt like her professionalism was what made her the right person for me to promote. So that's something that really speaks to the social self versus the professional self. She didn't care as much about me liking her as she did about sharing positive work, sharing results, having boundaries, communicating. And this really shows up when people have bad negotiations or business dealings. They often wonder what's wrong, and the truth is nothing's wrong. But one possibility might be that they lapsed into their social self in the workplace, this part of them that's been trained their whole life to go with the social grain, this whole part of them that's not to cause any upset or ruckus with anything other than the comfort zone. It's a natural default setting. And the problem is we don't create a distinction between our professional and social self. It's like we can't see it. We bring that social identity to work. So here's a question for you. How do you show up in the workplace? What's your natural default setting in the workplace? And let me ask you, if you've had any bad business dealings, did your desire for likability or your social self play a factor in that business dealing? So as I mentioned, your social self is the overriding social desire to be liked at every juncture. And to those of you who love good commencement addresses or speeches on YouTube, I highly recommend a commencement by David Foster Wallace, and it's called This is Water. And it's captured beautifully through a YouTube video with two goldfish at the beginning of the video, swimming by one large goldfish. And the large goldfish looks at the two little goldfish, and he says, "Good morning, boys. How's the water?" The little fish look at each other, and they say, "What the heck is water?" The point of the story that I want to share here is that the most obvious things in our lives often cannot be seen or changed if you can't identify them. And that's why it's important to really try to acknowledge where you are and where your actions, your thoughts, your voices, your statements come from. It's not to feel shame, because you can't leave a place you've never been. Unless you really see how you're showing up, you can't change it. It just operates you. It's like when you're in water, just like those goldfish. You're in your subconscious programming. You're an autopilot. You don't even realize that this air you're breathing in, as those goldfish don't realize, is just what is so obvious to them that they can't see it. So here's my question. Have you been driven by your social self at work? And not to mention, the social self is something that's built throughout the most formative stages of your life. And in the process, as a young kid, you may develop certain wounds or needs that may have not been met, and these can play themselves out in the workplace. These can play themselves out in your desire to be liked by other people. And when this is the case, your emotions just show up and they run the show, rather than your intentions or your choices. So anyway, I've been bringing you down, I realize, here, with news on how your social self can just run the show and it can hurt your work. So my intention is to now pick you up by talking about the professional self and what you can do and how you can show up professionally with more boundaries so that you can get out there in a bigger way. So who is your professional self? What does that mean? Whatever you're opting to do for a living is your professional self. And what's so transformative about your professional self is realizing that you are the author of that. You weren't trained to be it when you were young, but you create it as you age. You create who you want to be now and who you want to be later. And this self is powerful. This persona becomes relevant. This professional identity only becomes relevant later when you abruptly enter the workforce in life. So if you think about it, you've been driven by your social self, likability, in your transformative years as a child, all the way up to when you suddenly abruptly enter the workforce. And suddenly this switch flips where you're in a professional environment, but you have yet to be conditioned by society or the people in your life on how to show up professionally. And this can become relevant at different stages of your life and different seasons of your career. And for that reason, it's really difficult. It's really difficult to create without any conditioning. And people, I hear a lot when I talk about this topic, people tell me that they don't feel authentic when they try to be stepping into a professional identity. They say that they're usually more low-key, they're usually more friendly, they're usually humorous, they're usually more flexible. And I felt that way a lot of the time when I was at the Pentagon. I felt very buttoned up in my suit. And I used to think that that was just not who I was. But my thoughts on this is that it's not inauthentic to a professional identity. In fact, the word author and authentic come from the same root. And to be honest, when you try to be your authentic and agreeable self in the workplace, you're just being automatic. You're just being pre-programmed and default and your social self. And again, as I mentioned, when I was at the Pentagon, this really showed up. I was trying to be liked at every single juncture, and it didn't matter who I was trying to get to like me at a certain point. But what's powerful in the workplace is respect. And I noticed, just like that analyst that I ended up promoting, I got more respect as I let my social self sit in the back seat rather than letting it drive the car. Likeability meant something to me, but my professionalism ran the show, and it generated a lot of positivity in my career. This took place in the form of raises, promotions, awards, new opportunities, and these were all rooted in a certain level of respect you can only earn through showing up with an intentional professional identity. And what's really being authentic is being the author of who you're being and who you will be professionally, choosing rather than reacting to situations as they come. This is your professional self, creating who you are rather than having your past hurts, beliefs, wounds, social conditioning subconsciously run the show. So in a way, you're not living through your social self. To be honest, you're being lived. Remember when I mentioned, 95% of your operation comes out of the subconscious mind. And by the way, psychologists are finding that most of your programs and beliefs around the world, about the world, are being set by age 7. So think about how that stringent social self conditioning, that desire to be liked, how deep-rooted that is in you, and how that may be showing up in your workplace. So I want to ask you just to kind of think about this. Do you have some key experiences that have defined how you show up in the workplace? Is there anything about your upbringing, about your social identity when you were a kid and an adolescent that has influenced how you are in the workplace, your confidence, your voice? So here's an example. This is a recent example. I was actually at a networking event months ago, and I ended up getting into a really deep conversation with the CEO of a global company about how he runs his company and how he's having challenges retaining millennials. And he started talking to me about his company's weekly work meeting, and he leads this work meeting every morning on Wednesday at 9 a.m. And he was talking to me about this guy, I'll just call him Josh, who always came in late. And every time Josh would come in late, he would tiptoe into the office. He would look around kind of with that face, saying, sorry, I'm late. And he kind of looked at everyone, asking them with his expression if he had missed something. And it was clear that his tardiness was very disruptive to everyone. And when I asked the CEO what he did when Josh came in late, he'd say that he just said hi with a grin, hoping that Josh would kind of notice how disruptive this was. And later, the CEO asked me to come into his office. He hired me as a coach to make some recommendations on how he could retain his millennial employees, and I asked him if I could come in during this meeting. So I purposely came in on Wednesday at 8:45 a.m. getting ready for my staff meeting. People were kind of noticing me and not really asking anything about who I was as I settled into my seat. And I was not surprised to see the infamous Josh walk in late. And I watched this exchange that the CEO spoke about to me. And again, he apologized, and my client, the CEO, said, no problem. He smiled, and he said, no problem. As Josh said, I'm sorry, and stepped into his seat. And I looked around the room in this moment, and I just saw a sea of employees rolling their eyes. And I could just tell the first thing on their mind was, who is going to run this thing? It was difficult because after this, I had to sit down in the CEO's office and tell him that he might have been the problem here. He was being dictated by his social self. Every time he let this guy, Josh, this his employee, off the hook, he was operating out of his social self, the one in him that wants to be liked. Every time he said, no problem, it's okay, his employees, who took the time to get there on time, who woke up early, who made it to the office, who showed up, didn't feel respected by him. And in exchange, they didn't give him their respect. So needless to say, these employees started wondering who was truly running the show. And because he was leading from his social self, the one in him that wants to be liked, he really didn't hold anyone accountable. He wasn't comfortable speaking those difficult truths to his employees as a leader, particularly Josh. And as a result, no one really respected him as a leader. In fact, people liked him, but they didn't professionally respect him. Perhaps he might have been a good buddy to have drinks at 6 p.m., but they didn't see him as a leader, and this was all caused by his social self. And this sort of culture, this culture where millennials in his company did not feel like they were being led by someone, translated from the top, from him, all the way into management. And this was a huge root of his retention issues. So one last time, I want to ask all of you, do you operate out of your social self at work, the one in you that is driven by this desire to be liked? Have you taken the time to create your professional self, to think about what are the issues in your daily work life and how can you show up with them? Are you the type of person that handles difficult employees? Are you the type of person who knows how to go to HR when there's an issue? Are you the type of person who always honors your time commitments and never shows up late? Who are you in the workplace? Who is that professional self? And here's the thing, as I mentioned before, the social self can be awesome. I think it really holds a great place in your life, and you can use it in your social situations. My social self shows up with my family and my friends who I want to like me. I can be accommodating with them. I can be nice with them. I'm pleasing. This is how often we all are with our family and friends. However, being driven by this identity really does produce a lot of chaos and a lack of respect in your professional setting. The social self often sloppily attempts to be like. It might say something like, call me anytime, would love to meet you. And certain things that just might belong better on Facebook or something like that than it does in an office. And being a professional with a professional identity does not mean being cold or unlikable. It just might mean being intentional, having boundaries, and having a protocol. It means deciding who you really want to be. And it's driven by the desire to be authentic and to be respected and to be successful and to lead by example and to be powerful. And to be honest, I mean, I could only imagine what a client would think if I sent an email from my social self. I'm guessing a client would think, do I really want to be coached by this person? If my emails to them were driven by this desire to be liked. And I really think that this wild attempt to be liked would really harm my business, because the truth is it's disastrous to use your social self when the principled professional self is purpose-based and clear. So in summary, the good news here is that you are the author of your life, and I can't remind you of that enough. You are the author of your professional path, particularly your professional self, and that is true authenticity. True authenticity is an intention and in creation, deciding who you want to be. You write the part that you play. you get to create this professional persona that you want operating in the world. And it's fun and it's fulfilling and it's satisfying to create a professional self and to try it on for size and to live into it. Decide how you answer emails. Decide how you handle corporate politics. Decide what you do and don't share in the workplace in advance before you're in those situations, that you can honor your most well-thought-out, intentional, and healthy protocol for who you want to be. And once you truly embody that, this realization that you can create who you are professionally, let it sink in. Try it on for size so that you can start to operate from it. Because real ownership is when you come from the place inside of you that you've created. And on that note, I just want to thank you for joining me in this information. And I hope to see you register for my teleclasses in the future so that we can connect with more Q&A on that level. I'm no wise old owl, but these insights have absolutely shifted my career and the careers of other people in my life. And I would love to answer any questions you have from here on out about how to come up with this social persona and how to flip this switch in your life. So I guess, Katie, at this point, I can open it up to questions unless you have anything else you'd like me to share.
No, that's wonderful. Yeah, just open up for questions. If anyone has any thoughts or questions for Ashley, please go right ahead. Just unmute your line and chat.
I have a little bit of a statement or a question. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I at one time, I'm an assistant manager for a pretty good sized company. It's a multi-million-dollar company. And there was one time where I had one of my employees, because she had been kind of reprimanded about something, just the way she handled something for one of our customers, I kind of had, you know, taken her aside and talked to her a little bit. And then she went over my head. Told my manager that, you know, she didn't like working for me because she thought that I was kind of bossy. So then I was taken in by my manager and told, you know, that I needed to tone it down and not talk to them condescendingly and, you know, to kind of make sure that they liked me and kind of be more their friend than their enemy kind of thing. So ever since then, I've always had it in my head that I really can't push the envelope by just letting them know. And I wouldn't take anybody in and reprimand them or do anything in front of, like, customers or anything like that. I always make sure that we went into a different area and we talked, and I thought it went fine. Now, to this day, now I'm rewinding, fast-forwarding 2 years later. And, you know, this person, this employee that we had is a friend, you know, throughout all that time. And, you know, just now has since left the company, had her baby, and everything was great, and went to the shower and all that. But I always think back to that time where she kind of went over my head and just kind of, you know, brought it to my boss to squash me. I always felt that I was squashed at that point. Do you think that I'm wrong thinking that, and that I might should have done something differently?
Thank you for the question.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still with the same company, and now I'm being brought to go for management training myself, so I'll become a higher level. So I guess I might have taken the right road and kind of simplified things a little bit more for myself and not brought things out without talking to my manager. I guess the whole point of it was I should have went apparently to my manager to tell her that I was going to talk to this person. Where it all comes around after. So just a thought I just wanted to bring forward, because it is a big company now. We're much bigger than we even were back then. And it always makes you feel like you're still that, you know, smaller person. And if you're going to go forward, make sure you have that person above you involved.
Well, thank you so much for this question. I mean, oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, all good. I'm done.
Oh, okay, great. And what was your name, by the way?
I'm Sam. My name is
Sylvie. So nice to meet you. So I love this question, because first you asked if you were right or wrong, and I don't think that there's such a thing as right or wrong. But the first point is there's three types of business, right? There's your business, there's their business, whoever they are,
and there's the universe's business, the things that are out of your control. And what this person thinks of you is none of your business, especially on a personal note, if they think you're bossy. But what you think of you is your business. So if you feel like you're being a well-thought-out, intentional, powerful leader who's stepping in and speaking the truth, no matter how inconvenient it might be for your employees, you're really honoring that professional self, and you'll do that person more of a service than you ever would if you were being driven by the desire for them to like you. And your company will appreciate your leadership on that, you know, especially the chief executive, if he were to sit, be a fly on the wall and listen to you, really honoring his brand and or her brand, I hope, honoring this brand. And I think that for you, it's more just about kind of deciding, did you show up in a way where you feel like you were being a leader, you were creating boundaries, and you were helping the employee improve? Because when they sparkle, you sparkle, right? And that's part of my job as a coach, you know. It's tempting sometimes to want to hug someone and not speak the truth and want for them to like me, but the reality is I'm doing them so much more of a service as a leader and as someone that they're consulting with to tell them the truth, whatever that version is for me.
That's right. I took it more that way and, you know, kind of just went with it that way, knowing that with the way this company was running, you had to go to whoever was above you a little bit. So I took it as that. And, you know, I didn't get to the point where I was a total pest to my boss, but I would bring more things forward before proceeding for anything. And it kind of benefited me because it made them more, she was more into the loop and felt that she had a little more control over what was going on in the different offices. So long story short, I guess, it all worked out in the end, but you know, it was kind of that way during that time. It was very iffy whether I was going to even stay with the company because I didn't feel that, you know, doing the work that they were doing for the customers, was the service that they were doing for the customers was the way that the company really wanted it, you know. So anyways, I did stick to it, and I'm glad I did because all these years later, I'm better for it. But thank you. I appreciate that. I feel like now, I did do the right thing, hanging in there, and I love the company, so therefore I just wanted to make sure that, you know, I felt that I was doing the right thing. Because I'm going to go on to management at this point, and I wanted to see if that was the kind of persona that I should continue with.
Absolutely, and there's nothing wrong in kind of being green or learning who you are professionally along the way, and that can mean in a situation like that, asking your boss how they think it's best to be handled. There's something really empowering about asking someone a question and letting them answer it for themselves to you, then telling them, right, how they can handle it. So saying what is powerful for you? What do you think is good management to you?
Right. Sounds right.
So
thanks again.
Yeah, thank you.
Hi, Ashley.
Before we go, oh, go ahead. Yep.
Yeah, no, I just, you know, coming from having my own business like you do too, how do you suggest turning your social self versus your business self? Because I feel like so many of my clients tend to work with me because of the way that I'm showing the other side of myself. But then it's like when you turn it on, when they actually become like a potential client and then become a client, it's kind of that, you know, interesting segue that takes – everyone's different. Everybody kind of comes into my life differently, and our relationship is a little bit different. But how would you kind of approach that? Because I know there are some other entrepreneurs on the call tonight too.
Yeah, I'm so glad that they're here because I know that this is something like the whole topic of boundaries and building your practice and getting clients and how to kind of navigate people that you can serve versus people that just – simply are a part of your social identity, where it just becomes really challenging to work with them from that professional mindset. I think my answer is that it's really personal, and you kind of have to decide what you truly can do in your work. So for me, I can't coach any of my friends or even sometimes mutual friends if they're too close within my network.
And I see them too often because I get so deep into their lives and their careers. And if I'm helping them launch a service-based business, I get too close into their business. And it just changes our dynamic and does them a disservice if I become a part of their social circle and not part of their business life only. That being said, it's different for everyone, and I don't think that there's a right answer. If your practice is run by and it's healthy with friendships and you are able to have that currency exchange, have that money exchange, and have those money conversations with them happily obliging without any tiptoeing, then that seems to be working for you. It's such a personal thing. But I would definitely say on the note of the professional self to think about those things before you are in those situations so that you don't haphazardly get in a situation where somebody says, you know, that they want to hire you and they're your friend and you're kind of on the spot and you go with it, but rather you've really thought, okay, who am I willing to coach and who am I not willing to coach or serve as any sort of service provider?
Great. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. I always think about questions.
Yeah. Does anyone else have any thoughts or questions for Ashley? Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us tonight. It was so wonderful to have you here and to kind of really share about just kind of thinking outside the box a little bit. I feel like we have a lot of entrepreneurs on the call. We have a lot of women working in corporate. So it's kind of really interesting to kind of hear the whole wide spectrum of all that. So thank you so much for being here. And thank you so much for being here. And again, I just posted in our Facebook group her Ashley's website, so you can join her newsletter if you would like to kind of stay with her. And she has amazing workshops. And if you're in the LA area, she's actually going to be speaking the first Tuesday of October at the General Assembly in Santa Monica with the Young Female Entrepreneur Group. So if you want more information about that, just let me know. And next week, we actually do not have a group session because it's Labor Day. So enjoy your Labor Day. And you'll still be getting an email from me with Module 4. And then week 5, September 8th, we actually have an amazing guest expert. She's a stylist, and she's going to talk to us about really kind of finding your own unique style and really kind of dressing for your body shape and your personality and how that really does have an effect on your health and how dressing differently can actually help you feel better in your body and help you feel healthier. So, again, thank you all for being here, and thank you so much, Ashley. I really appreciate your time and all of your amazing insights.
Oh, thank you so much again for having me. It's been an honor to talk with you guys.
Wonderful.
Thank you very much,
Lady. Thank you. Have a wonderful Labor Day. And if anyone has any separate questions for Ashley, if you didn't feel comfortable kind of speaking up on the phone, you can find her contact information on her website that I shared with all of you, too.
Awesome. Thanks again.
Thank you. Welcome. Thank you, everybody. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye.